This is the Post America Podcast.
That's right, motherfucker. What the fuck you know about podcasting? This is our shit. Post America. Macho Black, Richie Crutch, Chrissy the Baboon. Post America Podcast, son. Download that shit, motherfucker.
Yo, what's up, everybody? It's Richie back with another regional scene series. And today I'm bringing you someone from a key area, a key region, so important to the 90s. I got Chris Baldwin up in Boston. He's going to talk to us about the 90s today. What's up, Chris?
What's up, Richie? How we doing, man?
All good here, man.
Good, good. Good to hear it. Thanks for having me.
Of course. When I thought about doing this, you know, like when, you know, Boston came to mind immediately, oh, got to definitely cover Boston. But in my head, I'm like, who's going to cover Boston? You know, like, because it got to be someone who is really entrenched in, like, you know, like in the foxholes of that whole time. And I'm like, oh, I got to get hold of my man because it would be perfect. I could get a band guy and they'd have their own unique perspective, you know, but you were there, you were in the mix, you lived it. So let's talk about 90s hardcore in Boston.
Let's talk about 90s Boston hardcore. It's on. You think of me in that way. It's like putting it out there, but that's some pressure, man. That is some pressure.
You know, everybody says that, but this is the thing. You're not going to remember everything, and you're going to have your kind of your own favorites, and some stuff might have went on right under your nose back then. Exactly. And you kind of weren't, you know, it happens. Like we don't expect. Right. You know, somebody would be at home being like, what about this? What about that? Hey, yep. Listen, you know, yep. It is what it is. This is how it came out.
And to think that was like 30 years ago. That's crazy.
That is crazy, bro.
That's crazy. Like in my head, some of the stuff was just last week.
Totally. It is. You just said 30 years. I almost had like an aneurysm or some shit. Like that's crazy.
I'm not old. You're old.
No, not me. I'm just like a kid. I'm a kid trying to learn about the old days. And I go to an elder like you and you could school me a little bit.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
But check this. This is one thing about the 90s that almost any scene around the country, throughout Europe, it seemed like a time like it was like the changing of the guard almost.
Yes.
And was that the case in Boston?
It was, because you had bands around in the 80s, because Boston had a big scene in the 80s, and in the early 90s, a lot of those bands still carried over. You had bands like, you know, Slapshot, Wrecking Crew, and those bands were still going strong, and, you know, Slapshot's still going strong today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you had like the younger kids coming in, like myself. You know, I started going to shows like 86, 87, and then, like, you know, my first, I was into thrash. I was a big thrash guy. Mm. So, you know, we'd go to the draw shows, and then, you know, a lot of that just carried over into the 90s. I mean, yeah, into the 90s.
And that's when kind of, so that's your step into the scene personally, is through metal and thrash.
Yeah, thrash metal, man. You know, we'd go to like the VFW halls. We'd see like local thrash bands, you know, kids we were in high school with, that would have bands that would say, come out to the VFW hall, we're playing this. So you'd go and see, you know, and you'd go meet different people, and then, you know, you click up with different people and see, you know, you hear about different shows. And then, what was it? I saw Exodus and Sick of It All opened up. Mm. And, it was nuts. It was like the first time I ever saw anything like that. And in my head, you know, I saw Sick of It All. I seen all these like short haired dudes. I'm like, yo, these skinheads, they're crazy. You know, 'cause I didn't realize these were hardcore kids.
Yeah, yeah.
And the aggressiveness of Sick of It All, I was like, yo, it's like, that's what I want. I like, because, you know, I wanted the aggressive music.
Yeah, and it's like their look and the image is more relatable, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, you know. But I was still going to thrash shows, but then started going more and more into hardcore shows. And then I think my first show in Boston was Killing Time with Bad Trip and Swizz at the Ratskeller.
Wow.
I think that was like 88, 89. A lot of it's just a blur, man. It really is. Like a lot of it just like melts into itself, you know?
That's amazing though. Killing Time at the Rat. Like, wow.
Yeah. Dude. And I remember I think Bad Trip, they put out like a mini trampoline on the side of the stage.
Really?
The Rat. Yeah. And the Rat was like a small place, and like dudes were just like jumping over. And like I said, I was hooked. Like the energy after that, man, I was like, yeah, this is where I'm supposed to be. It was just aggressive, you know. That's what I liked.
Yeah, that's what does it. There's certain personalities that stick with the thrash and stick with the metal. They weren't too like weren't really happy with the aggression. They didn't care about it, or they didn't flat out didn't like it. But there's a certain personality back then that was like, after seeing a band like Sick of It All, same, you know, with us down here, like we Sick of It All was one of those bands, the early bands we saw, and we were like, wait a minute, what is this?
Right, right.
They're not banging their head. They're not wearing like a leather coat. Like, I like this. There's no fronts, you know?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. But then being a hardcore kid going to thrash metal shows, everybody always looked at us like we were like the jocks.
Yeah.
You know, and like, dude, like metalheads would always like try and start fights with me and my friends, thinking that we were just a bunch of jocks at shows.
Now, I figured you'd get resistance from the local metalheads who didn't understand. But how about like the older generation of hardcore guys towards your generation and your look and the way you guys acted? Was it like a different vibe, or were you guys tight with them right off the bat?
No, I met a lot of really cool guys when I first started going to shows. Like at like real hardcore shows, there was never any problems, really never any beefs. Like everybody got along. It was pretty welcoming. I mean, but you had like, the scene is pretty divided in areas, really. Like when you talk Boston hardcore, it's more just like Eastern Massachusetts. Everything like Eastern Massachusetts just considered Boston hardcore, because you're not going to run around representing Marlboro hardcore or, you know, like Rockland hardcore. And then the only scene out of that I could really say made a difference was Brockton. Brockton had its own hardcore scene. But, you know, like everybody kind of got along for the most part, like real hardcore shows. It was kind of cool.
So who would you consider like the first really 90s Boston hardcore band that would make a mark up there?
Well, for me, that was a band called Berserker. And they were like metal influenced, but hardcore, you know. And they, have you ever heard Berserker?
I know that name, but it seems like that name might be like, there might be Berserkers all over the country. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm not sure if the Berserker I know of is from Boston.
Like they were just really aggressive, heavy, you know, they had a lot of breakdowns, and that was before people were doing stuff like that. You know, and the singer of the band, he was just like this big, huge, intimidating dude. He had arms the size of my legs, Big Tom. You know, he was just a presence up on stage, and he just didn't give a shit about anything.
I got to look into this now. I wonder if that's the band I know, Berserker.
Berserker, yeah. They got some good stuff out there. They would play a lot, like, you know, open up for like Sheer Terror.
Oh, yeah?
Like that. Yeah, when they would come around. But they were like really the only band of that time. That's what I was into. They were the band at that time that really made a presence in the early 90s.
Yeah.
You had all the older bands carrying over.
Yeah.
That was like the first band for the 90s that I remember, like the early 90s that I was like, wow. And then, you know, mid 90s just exploded with everybody.
Yeah. By the mid 90s, Boston had a real good mix of all style, different bands and stuff.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, they did.
Now, was there any kind of, because there was kind of like almost, you know, I'm not dissing, but almost like the snotty element of like the Converge type bands or what is American Nightmare, Cave-In.
You know, absolutely. Like, you know,
did they mix and gel with just the scene itself, or was that a more exclusive kind of thing?
Yeah and no. Like everybody would put on the same bills. Everybody go to the same shows. But like, you know, there were certain bands that like, they wouldn't get book shows because of the crowd they would draw, like Blood for Blood specifically.
Okay.
You know, like although they drew the tough guy crowd, so like they wouldn't get shows, you know. So, and I can remember, like, you know, Mike Mahoney, the drummer for Blood for Blood, you know, he'd tell me like, yo, can you have Wrecking Crew hook us up with some shows? And I'm like, yo, it's like you just kind of got to do shit yourself, because, you know, Wrecking Crew was out touring and doing shit, so it's like you got to kind of do it yourself. So that's how Mahoney started booking shows.
Okay.
And then, you know, it kind of became divided like that. Like all those bands would start a Lincoln, like, you know, you'd have Blood for Blood, Reason Enough, Reach the Sky, you know, all those bands would start linking up. But then, you know, you'd have like the Converge and the Cave-In and stuff like that.
So it's like scenes within the scene almost.
Yeah, absolutely.
That seems typical for the times. Even now that seems typical.
Yeah, but in the early 90s, there was like such a mix of crowds, man. Like all these bands had just put on the same bill. Like the first time Clutch would be able to put on hardcore shows. I don't know if that happened down
where you're at. Yeah, definitely. Yep. Yep.
But like the first time Clutch played, they played at the Rat with Breakdown. It was like Breakdown, Stock Weather, Converge. I forget a couple other bands, but that was all like one bill.
Well, you mentioned Stark Weather, old PA band.
Yeah. You know, but and so you'd have like a mix of people there.
Yeah. Yeah. So early on, it was more kind of just things didn't settle. Once stuff seems to settle, then people go into whatever corner they feel absolutely they belong. But early on, yeah, it's kind of like everybody's feeling it out.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, people start, you know, you're booking shows. You want to kind of get the most people as possible. So you kind of have a little bit of difference in music taste going on.
Yeah.
You know.
And in Boston, like we're talking about like scenes within the scene, like the straight edge scene, the Boston straight edge scene seemed very big, like throughout the country. Yeah. Down here, we, you know, it would be a thing.
Yeah.
Like, what's your recollection of that whole scene, those bands or any personalities that came out of the Boston straight edge kind of vibe?
You know, I never really went to a lot of straight edge shows. You know, I'd go see Ten Yard Fight every once in a while. Like I was cool with John LaCroix.
Yeah.
And you know, I worked their last show, doing security for the last show. But besides,
so that was kind of like their own thing.
Yeah. 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 Absolutely.
That's a shame. Stuff works out like that, you know. But yeah, it is what it is.
Well, you can see because everybody, you know, it's almost like their interpretation of what hardcore is.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like the straight edge kids don't like the way, you know, the blood for blood kids are, you know, like and vice versa. So, you know, mm-hmm. you wouldn't want that, the different crowds there. But I mean, one of the best shows I ever saw in the Boston, it was like Earth Crisis and Blood for Blood.
Wow. That's so, a beautiful thing. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and everybody got along, but it was just, you know, it was more like the people booking the shows were like mm-hmm. snotty against it. Didn't want the mix of crowds.
Now, if there would be any mix of crowds, would there be, was there any internal beefs going on? Did, you know, was anything like that going on up there?
Not really. Not that I can remember. Like I said, like at real hardcore shows, never really problems.
That's beautiful.
Little stuff popping off here and there, but
I think that might be a misconception that people had about the 90s Boston scene, you know, because reputation-wise, it was considered, you know, people assume it was very violent.
It was in different shows. You know, you got to remember, like, Boston has a big music scene in general. Mm-hmm. You know, you got Berklee School of Music, and people would just come for that. And then, you know, they start, like, especially in, like, the early 90s, you had grunge. So, you had, like, all the grunge shit coming in. So, you know, people didn't know where to put grunge and metal and hardcore. So, a lot of times, those shows would all get mixed. So, you'd have all these people, like, going to hardcore, like, you know, hardcore kids going to these shows, you know, and, like, certain crowds that don't like the way people mosh. Like, you're only supposed to push mosh. You're only supposed to circle pit, you know, and people are running around like, you know, the karate dojo.
And that's when the issues would arise, maybe.
And that's when the issues would arise. And, you know, and all those people, like, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. People would just start bitching and moaning about it.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the grunge. That's true, though. Like, in the 90s, down here, I recall that, too. Like, there'd be random shows we'd play with what would be a grunge band that kind of had nowhere else to play.
Right.
You know what I mean? And they definitely felt like they didn't fit on a metal bill, so they would come on some hardcore bills. But to us, it was like a weird thing. We, at the time, I don't think we were calling the grunge. We'd just be like college people music or some shit, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And how do those shows end up down there?
Yeah, of course. Like, people didn't get it. And then,
right.
Yeah.
Well, like, you know, you had Clutch coming around for a few years, and they would play hardcore shows. And then as it became popular, they started playing more like radio friendly shows, you know? So it's just, like I said, just a mix of crowds. And, you know, there was like, if we went to a metal show or a show like that, or like a radio friendly show, like, you know, you see a hardcore kid at a show, like, you know, wearing a hardcore shirt, you're going to look out for that kid. Like, even if you don't know him that well, you're going to look out for that kid, make sure nobody fucks with him.
He's one of us.
Right. Exactly.
He's got a flag on his chest.
Exactly. You know, you throw the flag out there. Exactly, you know, and then you know, you see him the next week. I'm like, oh, I remember you from that show.
Next weekend, you beat him up at a regular show.
No,
when he's at the normie show, then we look out for him.
That's it. Allegedly.
What were the key venues up there throughout the 90s that you could recall?
I had to take notes on this one, man, because like, every time I started thinking of one, like another one would pop on my mind. Of course, you know, you had the Rat.
Yes.
Incredible. I mean, that was like, you know,
I was awesome. Lucky enough to go there a few times and play there a couple times. That was a real cool spot.
Yeah. The Channel, that did like a lot of metal shows, but they would have like Sunday all ages matinees.
The Channel, I never heard of that one.
Yeah, yeah. That was like all like mob owned.
Nice.
And like the dude that owned it ended up in a ditch somewhere.
Oh, shit. And
yeah, next to that was like they had like a little smaller venue on that called the Edge.
Mm.
And they did like smaller hardcore shows and stuff too. You know, the Middle East was still around.
Still going the Middle
yeah,
East.
Yeah, yeah. Middle East, TT the Bears.
Incredible the run that place has had.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then you had Bun Ratties.
Okay.
That turned into like local 186 in the later 90s. And then you had like stuff down on Lansdowne Street that would do shows every once in a while. Like, you know, at Avalon would have like the metal bands come through, but every once in a while there'd be like a hardcore band opening up for them. Like Sepultura played there with Earth Crisis opening up for them.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, wow. No, it was cool. Like that show, Sepultura had, you know, their drums and stuff going.
Yeah.
You know, and there was like, you know, they had Earth Crisis doing like the drum beats with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so like, you know, and I was up there with them because I was, you know, cool with the Earth Crisis guys. So we're up there banging on the drums for Sepultura. That was awesome.
That's dope. That's really cool.
Yeah. And then you had Mama Ken and Axis down there, and Venus de Milo was another. They thought like Lansdowne Street. That was more like a corporate street.
Uh-huh.
But what happened was, like, you know, hardcore kids, you work your way in the, you know, into working security, and next thing you know, there's hardcore kids being managers. And next thing you know, it's like, yeah, hardcore kids are booking shows.
Next thing you know, belongs to us.
Yeah, yeah, the slow takeover. The slow takeover, you know, that's how you get them, you know.
That's it. Beautiful. You implant the guy and then you wait.
Yeah, there was some other, like Brockton had its own scene. We had a 121. Did you ever make your way up there for 121?
Yes, definitely. Yeah. Cool place.
Yeah, yeah, that was like a rehearsal studio. That was like Lawless Brockton.
I was just going to say that. I remember all different kind of hallways and rooms there and stuff, like places to hide and people going in this room. That, like, the local guys, you know, they, oh, come back here. And I'd be like, oh, these motherfuckers know this spot. But it was a rehearsal spot. I didn't realize that.
It was a rehearsal spot with a big room with a stage. So, you know, you'd have bands like early DVD, Brian, all those dudes hanging out in their room, you know. And that's why it was a cool
And what was spot. Brian's name, band name again back then? It started with like Incision, yes.
Incision, yeah.
Yes.
Yep, good
I
shit.
I think that's where I might have met Brian back.
Probably.
Then. Yeah.
Yep.
So how far is Brockton from Boston?
Brockton's weird. Brockton's like, it's like 30 minutes from Boston, but it's also like only like 40 minutes from Providence. So Brockton kids, we'd bounce back and forth.
Prime location then.
Yeah, yeah. It was funny because when I first started going to shows, like, Boston scared the hell out of me because it was, you know, it was really aggressive and, you know, I wasn't used to that shit. So I was like, I'm going to go down to Providence. So, you know, Providence seemed like a little safer. So I went to Providence, but, you know, slowly I was like, yeah, I'm going to start making my way back into Boston.
And where were you from exactly? You weren't from Boston?
I grew up in Brockton.
Oh, okay.
I grew up in Brockton.
Brockton, we got Marvelous Marvin, son.
Marvin Hagler, Rocky Marciano.
Rocky the Rock, baby. How is that? Just think of that, okay? These are two potentially top 10, two of the greatest boxers of all time, and a lot of people's top 10. And they're from the same city, and it's not even like a major city.
City of Champions.
Oh, incredible.
City of Champions. You know, I don't know, they call him Boston Mike from Scarhead.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he went to Brockton High with me. Like, he was like one of the dudes I hung out with in high school.
No way, get out of here.
Yeah, yeah. It was like the same class. Like, those were all like, we were like the, I was like the metalhead and the skater kids. We always got along together.
That's awesome.
So yeah.
Wow. Very cool. So, so Brockton is a prime location, but it somehow has its own kind of identification.
Yeah.
So, if you're a Brockton band, you wouldn't say Boston Hardcore, or would you?
Yeah. I think. At first, you would say Boston until Brockton started really getting a name for itself.
Got you.
Okay. You know, so you're like I said, you know, you wouldn't go representing some small town because people are like, who, where?
Yeah, until, you know, people, so know, yeah.
Yeah, it's just easier to say, oh, Boston Hardcore.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I got. But yeah, at some point, though, Brockton became its own thing.
It did. It did. Yeah. You know, like, especially like later on in the years, like after, you know, we had the, you know, we went to one, you had, you know, the Tigers down at Romans and all that stuff.
Very cool. So what was it like then? What was it like, a good, like, tight squad between actual Boston, Brockton, and Providence? Or was there tension? Would you like?
Oh, there was tension because, you know, like, a lot of, like, you know, they'd see the Brockton kids and like the smaller group from Brockton area kids, like myself, they're like, oh, those are the kids that, you know, they're fucking shit up. you know, because we were just wild, like almost like city kids, because Brockton's kind of like, you know, it's a little city.
Yeah.
You know, so like we were a little bit more wilder than like the most punk rockers, and like a lot of people just weren't used to that.
You know? Any backlash from the older crowds off that kind of vibe or no?
Yeah, you know, like I know Slapshot dudes, they weren't too happy with it, you know, and
you have like, to straighten them out. Say, come here, I'll give you a slap.
No, like Slapshot. Like straight up, and you know, you get into the scene and you idolize this dude, you know, choke. You know, and then you see him and then he starts bitching and moaning about the violence of the scene. I'm like, yo, dude, weren't you just cracking some dude in the head with a hockey stick?
Yeah, for real. You had your fun. Now we can't have no fun.
Yeah, yeah. So that was kind of a bum out, you know, but it was like, it is what it is. Like, we weren't going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you know, you couldn't get rid of us. You know, and then that was the thing of like, if we were so bad, we were so, you know, wilding out so bad. At the time, think of it, we were like 16, 17, 18 year old kids.
Mm.
If it was that bad, you liked the scene so much, kick us out. You know?
Exactly, yeah.
Try this shit happening today. Try some 17 year old kids pushing their way around.
Yeah. Today. Dude, that's why I kind of opened it up with the changing of the guard, because I felt like that vibe, you know, not at the time, but looking back, that was like that everywhere, you know.
Yeah.
Throughout New Jersey, throughout PA, throughout Ohio, it was kind of like this new group of hardcore kids wasn't exactly liked by the previous punk hardcore, which, you know, they'd prefer to call themselves scene. You know what I mean? Even though we thought it was like the same shit, and we were like so happy to be there, we slowly learned like, you're not really welcomed. You're not really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Not really welcome, but yet they wouldn't say anything to you.
Yeah, they can't really say anything.
You know, but, and there was, you know, a couple of bands, they'd be really vocal about it on stage, which I thought was great. You know, that's why you start a band. You got something to say, say it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
definitely. Now, how was it up there? Because throughout the Northeast down here and the major cities down here, there was through the 90s, there was a Nazi influence that was like, would be unheard of today. Like you couldn't even imagine it today. Was it like that up there? Did you have some of that influence?
Yeah, we did. We did for a while. And then like, we just went to war, like straight up war with them. Like, you know, coming from Brockton, you know, like there was Black dudes, Puerto Rican dudes that were going to shows.
Yeah.
And for the most part, like there were different crews in Boston. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nazi crew being one of them. And they were kind of like tolerated, like whatever. And then just one day, just shit just got out of hand. We're like, yep, that's it. It's on. And it was at like a Sunday POW show. That's what these call them. It was a POW benefit show, really. And all these like Nazi dudes were there. And it just like, we just went at it. And we just said, yeah, we're just going to fuck these dudes up from now on whenever we see them. And that's what we did. Like we went like Nazi hunting. We would just hunt these dudes down.
You know, and it kind of, it worked, because like the present day scene has zero influence or problems by them. You know what I mean?
Right, right. Well, so you it's think
like, about, like those efforts definitely back then must have worked.
Right, right. Well, you need to think about it. Like if you smash somebody on site, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, and then, you know, people complain about the violence, but yeah, what, all right, well, you got these dudes coming around. We're not going to tolerate that.
Yeah. Yeah, so. It was like an eradication of that whole vibe, because like you said, they had their own little crews that was just kind of like, you know, for a decade before that in the hardcore scene, it was just like, okay, that's part of it.
Yeah.
You know, and kind of nobody, you know, that's why I like to give props to the 90s. Nobody really blinked an eye about tolerating neo-Nazis at the same show. Yeah, you might be like, ah, oh, those assholes are here, but they never did anything, it seemed. Our generation did, I feel.
Right. But I think, like, you know, once hardcore started becoming more popular in the cities, you know, you started getting more of a diverse crowd.
Yeah, definitely. So,
like, you know, you're like, yeah, we're not going to, like, one of my best friends is Black. Like, we're not dealing with that. We're not going to let him. You take cheap shots on him, because that's what they do. Stand on the side of the pit and take cheap shots on him.
Yeah, wow, motherfuckers.
Yeah. But like, yeah, we hunted them down, like chasing dudes down in like subways and stuff like that. They were like, a lot of them lived on the North Shore. So we'd like, of course, you know, girls are their worst enemy. You know, the ex-girlfriend would hit people up like, oh, this one lives here.
Oh, man.
Yeah. You know, so that's how you'd find
dropped dudes. Drop the dime on his ass.
Yeah. Yeah. You know,
this one.
But that was, you know, that, like I said, that was pre-internet days when you can get away with shit like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Forget it.
You know.
But yeah, now, like, if you do something like that, you're gonna expect something, you know. Yeah,
right. It's weird because they just started popping up around here too.
Lately,
yeah.
Ooh,
like there's weird. Like one group that, like, they were down in the South Boston parade. They showed up and they started throwing around banners, like, you know, and like all types of racist shit. And like I wasn't even around, you know, I'm older. I've done it, you know, but like,
yeah.
I heard like the younger kids, like they saw it, like it was on the news, like as it's happening live, dudes like got in their cars and like heading down there, but like they pop up, throw a sign up and they take off.
But not at shows though.
No, not at shows. No. You know what? They could be at shows because they're wearing the face masks. That's the thing. Like you don't know now, like they're not flying flags.
Yeah.
Like there was, I mean, years ago, actually it was probably 99, 2000. And it was like Madball and Death Foot Asana at Axis. And there was this kid, he had a screwdriver shirt on. Mm. And I'm looking at it, and this dude, he was young, man, you know? And I walked up to him. I'm like, nice shirt. And he looked, he goes, thanks. I go, no, take that shit off. And he's like, just looked at me. I go, that don't fly here. And I was like, I'll give you a pass because you're young. I mean, what are you going to do? Beat up a young kid like that?
No, you did the right thing. Yeah.
You know, so yeah, just like teach a moment, you know, like yeah. take that shit off. I was like, you're going to go over there. You're going to go buy a shirt from the band. You're going to wear that. Like, that and shit don't fly.
He cooperated.
Yeah. He kind of knew.
Beautiful thing.
But that's the thing. Like, I didn't understand, like, all the Nazis, and I'm sure you saw it, like, Nazis showing up to AF shows.
Yeah.
Nazis showing up at Madball shows. Nazis showing up at Blood for Blood shows where the singer's Bolivian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have songs in Spanish. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, he was obviously not a white guy.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Yeah.
But yeah,
no, yeah, like, we always thought about that back then. We're like, wait a minute. Why do they like this shit? This shit's for us, not them.
Stick to your Pantera shows.
Yeah.
That's what we call them, Pantera skins. Because that's the only time you'd see them.
That's a great description. Yeah, Pantera would play with a lot of hardcore bands too back then.
Yeah.
They loved that. Yeah, the Nazis did love Pantera.
They did.
I used to see them down here. I remember seeing them with a band called Pantera, with a band called Wrathchild America.
Wrathchild America. I remember them. Yeah, I remember seeing them at that tour.
Yeah, and it was just so many Nazis. I'm like, huh. I was like, well, this isn't my usual hardcore shit. Maybe that's why they're all here. You know what I mean? This is some other shit. But yeah, it's just think about that, though. There was a time when, you know, Nazis would show up to hear music. Like, it was just, it's almost like you say it now. It sounds so ridiculous, but it was a thing.
Right. And they were like, oh, that's okay.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Nazis are here and they're wearing swastikas and they're like, they have visible tattoos of like Adolf Hitler and apartheid symbols, and they're just walking around.
Like, there was one show that happened in Brockton, and it was in the 2000s, but whatever, you know. And it was like Anal Cunt was playing, and this dude came up and was like, "There's some Nazis here," and it, like, you know, that was our spot, so we don't want to fuck up our spot. I'm like, "Are they throwing any flags around? How do you know they're Nazis?" And the kid was like, "I just know they're Nazis." I'm like, "Well, I'm not gonna go beat up some dude on your assumption that they're Nazis."
Find out later you're wrong. Yeah.
No, Anal Cunt comes on. They took off their jackets. They all had big swastika shirts on. We kind of looked at each other like, yeah, I guess we got to do that. So do you remember Brockton at all upstairs, the Tiger's Den?
Yeah.
Roman? Yeah. So that was upstairs. But downstairs, it was a black biker bar. So we beat the hell out of them upstairs, dragged them downstairs. And, you know, the bikers come up to break it up. And we looked up. I'm like, yo, we don't like Nazis here, do we? And they like looked down. They seen the swastikas on their shirts. And it was like pure comedy. It was pure comedy, man. They're like, oh, hell no.
That's a bad night for those guys.
Yeah,
it was a different time, man. And, you know, I mean, the Boston reputation, always, you know, it leaked all the way down here, it leaked all over the place. And we would love to hear, you know, stuff like that. And just, you know, eventually you get to know everybody and you see all the things you have in common. But it was a time where it's just like everything changed. The scene changed, and in my mind, for the better, you know.
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's crazy. Like in Rhode Island had a big Nazi scene too. Mm-hmm. And when I was first going to shows, I remember being at the Rat, and I was, you know, I was a scared kid at the time. And you hear all these Nazis just showed up, and the whole club emptied up to go fight these Nazis, but they weren't, you know. But it's always just stuck to me like, holy shit, this is going down. You know, it's that nervous excitement though that you first get when you go into shows.
Yeah.
That nervous energy, like, oh shit, what's going to happen? You know, you feel like you survived something.
Yeah. It was like a, like half, like going to a show almost had the vibe of going to a haunted house on Halloween.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
This could be scary. Like, you're looking around every corner. You got, you know, you're with your three or four people. It slowly grows the number of people you know. But at first, it's like a lot of groups of three or four people all looking over the shoulder, wondering when something's going to pop off. But you just love this stuff so much. And it was like, yo, to get that record and to see that band, I got to go to this place. Let's go. You know,
and you survived something. You walked out, survived. And like a haunted house, sometimes you'd come out covered in blood.
Totally. Now, what in Boston, what were some like outside bands that were influential to like the 90 band? Like who were the guys listening to, you know?
Biohazard. You remember when Biohazard came out, everybody wanted to be Biohazard.
Yes. Everybody like, had that snare sound all of a sudden.
Yeah. Piccolo singers.
Yeah.
You know, that was big up here, you know, like
everywhere. I think when I talk about this, you know, and I ask that question, Biohazard is often mentioned, you know,
yeah,
very influential.
Very influential. Like, cause they would come play Brockton a lot.
Yeah.
Brockton. Yeah. So Brockton, but it was weird cause they would play Boston one day, Brockton the next, and then Providence the day after that.
Jeez. And that's like all under an hour.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And the shows would be packed at all of them. Different openers, but the shows would still be packed.
Yeah.
And I was like, crazy. Like, you think you could pull that off today, you know?
Very few bands could do that. Very few bands could have done that in the last 20 years. You know, maybe maybe four or five bands might have been able to pull something off like that.
Yeah.
Biohazard would work.
Sheer Terror. You know,
I always heard that Boston loved Sheer Terror. I
love Sheer Terror, dude. Like that was like one of my favorites. Like, yo, I took Paul Bearer to heart when he was like Spoiler. That was me. I wanted to be the Spoiler. I wanted to ruin everything, you know.
That's dope. Yeah,
but I mean, listen to early Blood for Blood and tell me that's not like
100%, definitely, yeah.
You know, like I can remember being in the studio with them and they'll be playing a song. I'm like, oh, it's a cool Sheer Terror rip, and they just start laughing.
You know? Yeah, and lyrically, the vibe, the kind of you know, miserable kind of approach, and Buddha's vocals itself, you know, definitely that style.
Yep.
But I mean, Blood for Blood was just something else. But it came into its own thing.
Yeah.
And such an important band.
Well, you know what's funny with like them, like dudes like hated him at first, hated Blood for Blood just because of the name, you know, and the crowd, the tough guy music, because everybody had a thing against tough guy music, especially in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then after they started getting big, and like all the people that were knocking them years ago were coming around trying to like buddy up with them.
Yeah, there was no denying they became undeniable.
Yeah.
Now, like, I say this a lot, but I hope I'm not wrong, but I always think that I played with Blood for Blood with my old band in Club 121. Is that in New Hampshire or Maine, or where's that place that has Ben and Jerry's ice cream?
Vermont.
You remember a club called 121?
No, I remember 242.
242. Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, bro. I was there for that show.
Was that their second show?
No, that wasn't their second show.
Because I could have sworn we played with them at their second show up there way back.
And it might have been their second show in Vermont.
Okay. And I got their demo, and I was just so impressed with the like how it was pressed. And it had like, you know, like it was professionally pressed demo cassette tape. And I was like, whoa, I never saw that before. The next band I saw do that was VOD.
Yep.
They had like, oh, they pressed this somewhere. Holy shit.
Right. And both bands made an impact.
Totally. Totally. Yeah. You were at that show?
I was at that show. Yeah.
Holy shit.
I remember we traveled up, but we went in the back of my buddy Shabo's pickup truck. And before electronic fuel injection, it couldn't make it up some of the mountains up there in Vermont.
Oh my God, that's crazy.
But that was a beautiful city. That was like my first time I ever went to Burlington. I'm like, yo, this place
was real nice.
Yeah.
I remember whatever venue it was, they were making like Italian sodas for us with that syrup kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, maybe one of them cherry. I'll take a vanilla, you know.
And crazy thing about that, I think like Bernie Sanders had something to do with that club.
No way.
Yeah, like look into it. Like I think that was like one of his programs he wanted to start to like give back to the youth of the city.
I can't believe I was saying 121 this whole time.
121's in Brockton.
That's
Brockton.
You start throwing numbers around, I don't know what's going on, bro. I'm so bad with math. Like once numbers hit my head, I'm like, yo, man.
That's it. Yep.
Yeah, same. I'm about to faint.
Same.
So you had Biohazard, you had Sheer Terror. These were probably not just for you, but you think that was like for the Boston scene, probably big influences?
For the scene that I was, for the hardcore scene and the bands that I was taking part of, you know, because you know, bands like Reason Enough. I don't know if you ever heard them.
Yeah, definitely.
Reason Enough, Brawl Park.
Yeah.
Yeah. Bands like that. You know, those are like early Reach the Sky was kind of like that, but then they kind of went more like melodic type of Ian Larrabee's crazy stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
now 454 Big Block. I remember them coming to PA a lot and playing.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely. They were, they started like, it was bands from like Eye for an Eye,
Yep.
And then the guys from Wrecking Crew, when those bands were kind of done, that's when 454 Big Block started.
Yeah, everybody down here loved Wrecking Crew.
Yeah, yep.
Wrecking Crew is like a band, like we thought, like, ah, we might never get to see them again. Like, yeah. A couple people got to see them early on, and then it came back around at some point. I remember everybody's excited.
Yeah, yeah. No, they were great dudes too. Great band.
Yeah.
But yeah, 454 Big Block, like, and they would play a lot of like more like radio friendly type of shows. I don't know how, like, more like rock oriented shows, because 454 Big Block, they went on tour with Marilyn Manson and Clutch.
Whoa, I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's Clutch, fucking cool.
Marilyn Manson, Clutch, and 454 Big Block.
That is nuts.
Yeah.
Did you go to see any of those shows?
Oh, yeah. I went and saw them. They played a local show here, Mamakin.
Now, was Marilyn Manson like the same vibe he is now, all creeped out and shit back then?
Well, you know what? Yeah, he did. But I guess, you know, the way it was explained to 454 Big Block dudes was he asked, you know, he needs a certain amount of money. And he puts a lot of that money into props. So, you know, to get more money out of bands and clubs and promoters and stuff like that.
Gotcha.
So he did a lot of that shit from the beginning, I guess, just so he can get more money.
He's putting on a little show.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
What do they call that with the fire and shit? Prop, fuck.
Pyrotechnics.
Pyrotechnics.
Yeah. Can't do that nowadays.
I saw Marilyn Manson once just because he opened up for Motorhead.
Yeah.
And he sounded pretty good, though. He sounded right. Yeah, a couple.
I didn't mind it. You know, guilty pleasure. Yeah, it's a little guilty pleasure. Like, we all got those. Like, yeah, I listen to this, but, you know, you don't really put it out there.
He's a creep. I went to a party once in Florida. Like, it was an MTV, like, music thing weekend.
Yep.
And he was at the party, and he seems like a tall guy already. Plus, he's wearing these shoes that made him, like, 6 inches taller. And he had these contacts in. And you can't take your eyes off him.
Right, right.
You know what I mean? But I'm like, oh, what the fuck? Like,
looking at him sideways, being like, what am I seeing here?
See, I'm like old school. So I'm like, get this devil worshiper freak out of my.
You know? No doubt. No
but
doubt.
Yo, he was so creepy looking, man. Like, fucking nuts. And he talked like, you know what I mean? With they fucking do that real slow, low talk.
Yep.
It's a good gimmick. I like it. I appreciate it more now than I did back then.
Right, right. That was nice, but those, you know, you'd have bands like that come through with hardcore bands opening.
Yeah, that's something that to think about, because 454 Big Block, they were like a different style. It was like, I remember in our, like, you know, me talking to their friends back then, like thinking like, oh, they could be the next band. Like they could be the kind of band that we would see on MTV with a video kind of band, you know, like something like that. Yeah. That's very cool. And that would seem to always be like the potential of a Boston band. To us, anyway, always seemed to have more of that potential than a New York band, you know. And those were like, I don't know why, but it seemed like a Boston band had more potential of maybe getting like mainstream success, you know. But I don't know why, like, we thought that, but
I don't know. Like, but like, we looked at bands like Helmet that came around, like same thing. Like, you know, you had Helmet and like 4-4 Big Block, and like, it was like, seemed like a genre of hardcore that like that was that crowd.
Yeah. Yeah,
you know?
It could go that, like, actual major labels were looking at a certain kind of hardcore band, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they wanted nothing to do with Blood for Blood style stuff. They wanted, you know, the friendliest stuff.
You know, isn't that like a shame? Like, some of the great hardcore bands that didn't, like, never really got the budget that you'd imagine if they did get the budget, or just someone being like, I'm willing to invest time and money into this band. And I know going on the road is going to be financially, you know, devastating for them. So we're going to give them tour support like we do for band, you know, for Slipknot or for whatever. But for some reason, when it came to hardcore, there was never that willingness to do that. It was weird.
Well, I mean, there's no money in it. You know, what it comes down to.
There's almost no money in anything until you make that move.
True.
You know what I mean? Some bands work for 10 years and then they blow up. But all like Korn, I remember seeing Korn opening for, I think, Sick of It All, and they were thrown on because they were like, Sick of It All does pretty good. We'll put them on that. We'll throw them. We'll pay them. The label will pay them, and we'll make them a video, and then they blew them up. Like, a label made them big. You know what I mean? I just don't recall seeing that attempt for a hardcore band, and it's the music I love, so it frustrates me.
Same here.
Those motherfuckers. Always against us.
Always against us. That's good though. It builds characters. That is good. Builds bonds and characters though.
You don't want those creeps around here looking at people, like walking around sniffing everybody like a creep pedophile. Take your fucking money and get out of here. We make our own money. We do our own thing.
We still get them though. You still get them at shows. You know, every once in a while, you know. Every once in a while, you get the dudes that don't like. They look like they don't belong. And what do you automatically go like? Yeah, that's an undercover cop.
Yeah,
you know, that's a cop. That's a cop. Yeah.
Now, yo, give me some key personalities that you recall from the 90s Boston hardcore scene. Anybody stand out? Some guys that were important for the scene, whether it be for making a zine, a record label, just a crazy guy at a show that would be the best dancer to, you know, a show promoter, whatever.
A show promoter, yeah, like John Regan. He did Sky High Entertainment. Mm. He put on like a lot of the shows.
Kind of an important guy for the time?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, Sean McNally, he did Cringe. He did a lot of like the Slapshot and Sam Black Church shows that would happen.
Sam Black Church. Wow. I forgot.
Yeah. Boston was full of personalities, man.
Definitely. Right.
Full of probably like, where do you start? Where do you end? You know, there was this one dude, Castle Neck Mike. Yeah. Castle Neck Mike.
Wow, that's a crazy name.
Yeah, well, it's a crazy story that goes along with him, man. He was a hardcore kid, and he ended up, after a show, it was after a Biohazard show, actually, at the Rat, left the show, somebody said something to him, he left the show, went down the street, pulled his girlfriend out, and shot her in the head.
Wow.
Yeah, went to his apartment, and killed himself, like, had a police standoff, and killed himself.
Damn, Castle Neck, he stood, went crazy.
Yeah, but he's still, like, his name was Michael Cartier, and it's weird, because he stood out. It, you know, he was always like the crazy guy at the shows, and there was so many like different like rumors about this guy. Mm-hmm. You know, like you hear all types of shit, and he just stood out because he had, you know, it was before, you know, tattoos were cool. You know, before everybody looked like a Starbucks barista and a barber. You know, the dude had a big castle on his neck, so he stood out.
Oh, that's why he got the name.
Yeah, that's what he got the name. He had a big castle on neck, castle tattoo on his neck. Damn. And yeah, it's crazy. Like that's one thing that always stuck with me. Like
killed this fucking girl.
Yeah, like right after a show, man. It was nuts. Wow. I can remember standing up.
Biohazard's responsible for that. If it didn't play that night, she might still be alive.
That's it. No, like, yeah, but there was like laws passed on it because of that. Like, yeah. But the crazy thing was that dude was always talking to us about like not fighting at shows. Like, you shouldn't fight at shows. You should get along, blah, blah, blah.
So that motherfucker is talking about anti-violence.
Yeah.
What a
jerk. But he was like, but then you hear other stories. And he was like, you know, beating his girlfriends, ex-girlfriends all the way back.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, dude was an ass, you know. Yeah. But as a younger kid growing up, you know, you look up to someone like that.
Yeah.
You know, because the dude's a nut, you know. There was another dude, not on that level of nuts, but this other dude, Ski. Kevin Borowski, he sang for a band called Sucker Punch. Mm. And he's a tattooer now down in Rhode Island. But he was just a nut, you know. So they, once again, younger kids looking up to this guy, he was just a nutbag. And, you know, we would like, remember like driving around and, you know, my friend's Monte Carlo, you know, you get into like the car beefs with other cars, you know?
Yeah. That was a thing.
Yeah. Bored suburb kids, not, you know, just driving around, you know, like what would Ski do? That was like our big thing. What would Ski do in this moment? Like Ski would jump out and kick their ass. Like, let's kick their ass.
Ski was hard.
Ski was hard. He'd probably laugh. I don't ever think I ever mentioned that to him. What would Ski do?
That's good.
And then, you know, of course, Big Tom from Berserker.
Yeah, oh, you mentioned just, that guy. Yeah. Big.
Yeah. He was just a big, big presence, man. You know, Chris Wren, Bridge Nine. Got to throw that out there. That Bridge Nine Records started like the late 90s in Boston.
Very important label.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So important. A key label for the scene, the whole scene. Absolutely. Worldwide. Bridge Nine. Absolutely. So very important.
Yeah.
Just think of that, like the roster that guy was, you know, the shit he was putting out, man. Fuck. But,
well, I think like trying to think like the roster of just bands coming out of Boston.
Yeah.
It's just nuts.
Yeah. It was a hotbed. The whole, I mean, not just for bands, but like you said, labels and zines and personalities and shows and venues.
Yeah. Yeah.
It still really is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like, you know, but all those dudes paved the way.
Yeah.
You know, like you didn't really have like that in like the 80s.
No.
It was the 90s that started stepping it up, the more DIY style.
hands on, like do it. You know, yeah, we'll figure it out. Don't worry about
it. We'll figure it out. You don't want to do it for us. We'll do it ourselves. We'll figure it out.
Because look what, I mean, you got Bridge Nine. Look, and in current day, you got Triple B. Is that from Boston? Triple B Records?
Yeah. Yep. I believe so.
I could be wrong. That's a very important current label.
You know, jeez, I'm so bad with shit like that.
What are they feeding you people up there? What's going
on? Oh, I don't know. Anger and aggression sometimes at some levels, you know?
Yeah. But Lud, listen, it's producing music, and it's not like, it's not music that's going nowhere. It's like, you know, this is important stuff to our scene. And right. That's why I wanted to talk to you, and especially about Boston, because it's key. It wasn't just key in the 90s. It was key in the 80s. It's key now. And it's just like, but that 90s, like I told you earlier, it's just overlooked and sometimes not respected as I think it should be. You know, that's why I want to document certain things and just put them on wax. And then people, you know, you want to think something later when it becomes cool and you finally get it, how important the 90s were. Then you get it when you get it. You know what I mean?
Right. But, and you can look back and find something like
that. There you go. Like, oh, we did you a, there. Me and Chris did you a fucking
did
favor.
We did you a solid today. Hooked you up with limited knowledge from my perspective.
That's the thing. You know, so we're talking to one guy from an area, and you know, it's like, and like you said, there was other shit going on. Of course, you know, of course, like these bands, you know, I mentioned Cave In, Converge. These are big, important bands. Yeah. Just maybe it wasn't in your wheelhouse. 10 Yard Fight. Yeah.
American Nightmare.
Yeah, big people love these bands. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
What about Bane? That's Boston, right?
Oh yeah, Bane's Boston. They're great.
Now, Bane. When did Bane start? In the '90s?
I believe the late '90s, because I know they played 10 Yard Fight's last show.
Okay. Yeah, I think it was maybe 98, 99.
Yeah, yeah.
Now that's an important key band right there.
That is absolutely.
The love people have for Bane is impressive, man.
Right.
It's so.
And you know what I liked about Bane, like. Aaron would be on stage, you know, he'd preach the unity and, you know, keeping everybody safe at shows, but never really called anybody out. Like never pointed fingers, said this guy right here, this guy's an asshole, you know, but which I totally respect that. I thought that was awesome. You know, like,
yeah, that is. And that's something you could respect, because it's kind of like, you see the angle they're doing. Like it's if he preached unity, but then was calling someone out. Well, then that goes counterintuitive to his whole preach. You know what I'm saying? But if you preach unity and you're not pointing people out, you just talk about the cause and, respect.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, no, Bane was awesome, man. Definitely one of my tops.
Yeah? Who would be your tops? Give me your top five. Should I just do 90s or should I let you go crazy? Top five Boston all time.
Top five Boston all time?
All time.
Bane. I would do Bane.
Is Bane one or Bane five?
Bane would be like four.
Okay.
Bane would
be four. I won't put that pressure on you. Just give me
five. That's hard. I definitely got to go with Berserker.
Berserker. Berserker. You got me so, like, I got to check out Berserker.
You got to check out Berserker, you know? Berserker, Bane.
Listen, already stop right there. You got Berserker, Bane, Boston. You got three Boston. B's.
Let's go with another one. Yeah. Let's go another one. Blood for Blood.
Whoa.
Let's go. You
know, Berserker, Bane, Blood for Blood, Boston.
And then Reach the Sky. They did it for me too.
Great band, but there's no B there.
No, sorry.
No, it's good though. Reach the Sky. And I think you got room for one more, right? Is that four?
Is that four? Four people at Big Block.
There you go. Number four, 454. Yeah. Well, so 454 Big Block, Bane, Berserker, Blood for Blood, Reach the Sky.
Yep. Good and that's list. Such like a wide variety of hardcore right there.
Good list. Someone go on Spotify and make the Baldwin Boston playlist and put those bands on there. That's a good list, man. That's definitely very strong. And then you know what? And it's like when you start thinking about the bands left out of that, it's like, fuck, there's so many names, you know, from that area.
I like 10 Yard Fight. Like I can get into like the straightest 10 Yard Fight in my eyes and stuff like that.
Now you were never a straight edge guy, right?
No. I mean, I don't drink. Like, you know, I know when I'm going down to Disney World, I'm sitting by the pool. I'll have a fruity drink with an umbrella. But besides that, I don't drink. But I never really ran around yelling straight edge or anything.
You never drink?
Oh yeah, no, I do. Like, you know, like I said, when I go down.
I got you. But you're not.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I like to drink. I deliver beer too. That's what I do for my job.
I mean, one band that non straight edge people seem to really love though is Judge.
Oh, I love Judge.
Does Judge get a Judge always gets a pass by
everybody. Always gets a pass.
What
man. They
a
were great.
Fucking band. What a band.
They were great. So Judge recorded in Rhode Island. And the people that the guys that did the backing vocals were a thrash band from Boston called Wargasm.
Wargasm?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that band.
No, well, there's a new Wargasm that just came out. There's all like, yeah.
I know of the old one, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Yeah, they were great. They were like a great Boston thrash band. And that, once again, that's one of those bands that they should have been a lot bigger than they were.
Mm.
Criminally underrated.
And but you know what? Like, that place that you talked about where Judge recorded, a lot of great albums came out of that place.
Yeah, yeah. And you know what's funny? I wanted to say it was owned by like one of the New Kids on the Block.
Really?
Yeah. Don't quote me on that, but I want to remember. I remember hearing that. And years ago, like, I remember being at the channel and like that was like the rumor, like one of the New Kids on the Block was supposed to come and like check out more bands that were supposed to record, but that never happened.
If he did come, would you guys have beat him up anyway, or be honest?
Well, yo, that's the thing. Like, yo, like, cause that's what dudes were saying. Like, oh, dude comes here, we're gonna beat his ass. And I'm like, why?
Yeah, people were so nutty back then.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and I was like me and my friends were kind of like, no, like that's cool. Like, you know, whatever. You know. If dude wants to help bands out, he's got the money and the exposure to help out certain bands if they needed it too. So I was like, yo, let's, and me and my friends, we were just like, let's kind of look out for this dude if he does, you know, but that,
yeah,
you know,
for real.
He never showed up, you know?
I remember years ago with one of my old bands, Mushmouth, we were playing in like Virginia somewhere. Right. And we were cool with that band, Good Charlotte.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And they were from that area, DC or something. And they were coming to the show. And while we were playing, they came, they showed up while we were on stage. And the local kids chased them out of the club just for being Good right. Charlotte. Like, come on, give these guys a break.
Right.
You know what I mean? They're doing a nice thing. You know what I mean?
Exactly. Exactly. It's just going. But that's nuts. Just young. That's young kid shit, though, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. So it's funny, like, because but I would be bummed out if I was Good Charlotte. Like, damn, man, go to a fucking show. These motherfuckers chase us out.
Right.
I want to see a fucking band.
I just want to see a show.
That what a crazy time. What a crazy time.
Oh, it was, man.
Well, let me think. What am I leaving out? What's key? What needs to be discussed before I, because I know you're on a strict schedule. You got to hit the trails.
Well, yeah, throw some lights on the bike and let's go.
For those who don't know, this guy is a super crazy mountain bike rider.
You know,
not that Palantan or whatever it's called where you do it in your basement. This guy goes and hits the hills. The real
throw shit. Myself down the side of a mountain, man. There's a lot of hardcore dudes that ride.
It is crazy.
Like I, you know, Stickman rides.
Like an animal. He's like an animal.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's I'm always like, I said, you're too old for that. Stop.
No, man. It's just a number. It's a fountain of youth, man. Fountain
you're
of youth.
You're going to break your hip, you old no. man.
Don't bounce like I used to. That's for sure.
Any injuries from that or what?
Yeah. I broke my wrist last year.
Ooh.
Like, yeah, I went face first into a tree.
Holy fuck.
Like, literally over the handlebars, face first into a tree, then bounced down, like ragdoll down the side of the mountain.
Like, the wrist is a weird thing too, because you don't even think twice about the wrist until something happens to it.
Yeah,
and then you're like, "Wow, I really use this motherfucker a lot."
And but now, after that happened, it was like the adrenaline kicked in. I just jumped up. I'm like, "Yeah, let's go, let's go!" And I jumped on my bike, and we kept on going down the mountain. I was hitting jumps. I'm like, "Yo, something don't feel right."
Oh fuck!
But yeah, that's it so far. But yeah, there's a lot of mountain bikers out there though that are in the hardcore scene. It's great.
Yeah. Yeah, in this area in PA, I live like in the woods. People love that shit.
Oh, yeah, you got trails down there? That's it. I'll be down.
Let's go. Forget it. Anytime. I'll go out to eat when you're done. I'll go out to
that's
eat
with it. You. But now we can eat.
I don't. Back in the day, I used to be like in the freestyle, like the freestyle bikes, like a GT Pro Performer and all that shit. But I never did the mountain bike thing.
Yep.
I didn't like how big the wheels were. It didn't look right to me, you know?
Nah, so much fun.
No, it is. Yo, it's good because as you get older, like if you don't have stuff like that.
Yep.
Then you're just racing to the grave. You really are. You know, if you have something like that, it's like, it's life prolonging. It really is.
It really is. And I call it my dirt therapy.
Yeah.
You know, like I'm out in the woods almost like 4 or 5 days a week. You know, it's like my wife calls me a hippie now. She's like, you're just like a hippie out in the woods all the time. Like, look at the trees and the grass. I'm just like, whatever. But like, it keeps me sane.
Yeah. And you know, I love the woods, bro. I don't know about you, but I love the woods.
Yeah. Like, what used to keep me sane before, I get my aggression out at shows.
Yeah.
You know, now it's like, I'm just going to go hang out in the woods.
You went from one crazy thing to another.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Now, if we talk about Boston, we talked about some great labels, venues, personalities, bands. What was like, what were you guys, wearing at the time? What was like, because every scene, you know, we all kind of looked the same, but every scene had their own little twist. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Boston is the Scally Caps.
That's right. Yes.
Yeah. For some reason, like, and then I heard someone reference that one day, like, oh, that's like the Boston look, the Scally Caps. I'm like, I never really thought about it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess you're at the Kango hat. Everybody had those Kango Scally Caps.
Why is that?
I don't know.
Were like old timers wearing it up there? Like, certain.
I don't know. You know,
that's a cool look, though. It's like its own thing.
Like in the early 90s, you know, everybody had like the shell toes, the Adidas shell toes or the Sambas, and, you know, the jorts, the jean shorts.
Yes, that was big. Yeah, yeah. Jean
shorts with the windbreakers.
Some motherfuckers had the biggest jean shorts that they were basically just jeans.
Yeah.
Like, yep. You're just wearing regular jeans at this point. Like, you can't even see your ankle on that motherfucker.
That was when I was first dating my wife. She said that was almost a fatal flaw because I had these long shorts on and high socks.
She's like, nah. This guy, but I can't have this. I can't bring him home to the
I don't
like
know
this.
About that. You know, that was the early 90s. I'd say like the late 90s. Still had the jorts and the Carhartts.
Carhartt key. Yeah, Carhartt. I wish they didn't get so damn expensive because I still see Carhartt.
Right. So good.
Yeah, I wear it for work, but I was like, I can't wear it. You know.
And the camouflage shorts. That's it. That's like the uniform. Like if you would have seen pictures of me from like years ago.
Yeah.
Like I'm wearing the same thing. Camouflage shorts and a band shirt.
That's it, baby. That's you the know? Look.
But it's funny because like, you know, when my kids ask me to come to me now, you know, like, Dad, how's this look? I'm like, I guess it looks all right. But you're asking, you know, the opinion of a 50-year-old guy that's worn camo shorts and a black band t-shirt for the last 30 years, you know?
Yeah. You really want me to be your style consultant?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Put these sneakers on.
Yeah.
Put this Reach the Sky shirt on. Give me your camo pants. I'm going to cut them at the knees. And here, put these on.
But that's what, with camo shorts, before you could go buy camo shorts at Old Navy, that's what you'd have to do. You'd go to the Army-Navy store.
Yeah.
Buy camo pants, and then you'd cut them off. Wear them in the winter, and then cut them in the summer.
Yeah. And they'd have a certain age that they were perfect.
Yeah.
And then before that, they were like a little too like they didn't bend right in the beginning. Yep. And then after too long, they were just like wearing like tissue
one
paper.
Thin. Yeah, they wear thin. You'd be at a show, and all of a sudden you split your pants, and your dicks be hanging out.
Yeah, but for like a 3-year, 8-month period, they'd be perfect.
Yep.
You know what I mean? But then all of a sudden, I gotta get new ones now. Gotta get them out.
But yeah, no, that was the style. And then y'all, like the straight edge kids had like the varsity jackets. They were rocking the varsity jackets.
Great look too. Great
and
look.
And like beautiful. The New Balance sneakers were big up here.
Oh yeah,
yeah. I don't like what the New Balance like running shoes.
Yeah,
not like the pedophile creeper shoes, but the
no, I know what you mean. Yeah, yeah. I never thought about it. That's right.
That was a big up here.
That was unique to that area. I think. I wonder, did Boston? Who invented the varsity straight edge jacket look?
You know, I might some like DYS SSD kids maybe
was
like
that
in the 80s.
Them?
Yeah, because it was in Slapshot. Slapshot did it on Back on the Map.
Does Boston get the credit for the varsity straight edge jacket?
I mean, it's late 80s. Look at Slapshot Back on the Map. I think that's
holy crap.
The whole group of them wearing the
somebody did it first. And it might have been one of those cats.
There we go.
Wow. That's big. If it was one of them, that's big.
I still like that look though. Even though it's not like not
fuck yeah.
But I still rep that.
That's serious. Fun. That's a serious look. That's like this guy means big. He's in it for the long run.
He's there.
Like a varsity jacket means, you playing all sports, baby. If you wear that in school, it means you're legit into that school. I'm in every activity I could be in the school. If you wear that at a show, it means you're into the scene 100%.
I don't know,
my shit don't fit right no more, but I got one.
It don't fit as well as it used to, right?
It's around the neck. I think my neck gets bigger. Like my neck is almost the size of my waist at this point. I don't know what's going on. Yeah.
All that pop,
like SpongeBob. Yeah, I'm all fucked up. I look like a bucket of concrete.
There you go.
Damn. All right, homie. Listen, you filled us in. Anything you want to add? What am I forgetting?
Nothing I could think of, man. I hope it was informative. Like I don't
definitely, you know. Definitely. There's some bands that you know. Berserker was for me, but somebody else is another certain band you mentioned. Maybe Sam Black Church that somebody's gonna go look into
Early Diecast. Diecast. Those shows are crazy.
You know what we got to at least mention was the whole, because in Boston, like in the 90s in general, there were crews before the 90s.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But the hardcore crew as we know today was really birthed in the 90s, this whole style and that.
Yeah.
And you were one of the pioneers of that shit up there.
Yes. Yeah.
How does that stuff come about? Natural progression or what? How did that work out? And what were you guys looking to when did you get an influence by something to say, I like that, that's a good idea, anything like that?
Well, you know, like there were crews in Boston. There were a bunch of crews. You know,
any notable mentions?
Scooby Posse. Those wow. dudes are nuts. Yeah, Scooby.
Zaze. Hardcore dudes?
Yeah, hardcore dudes.
And Scooby Posse? Why yeah. that name? Any idea?
No idea.
What were they drug, like kind of drug dudes or no? Because wasn't the Scooby
no, they were all,
drug thing?
Yeah, I think so. Scooby Snacks, right? No, I don't know why Scooby.
That's a hard name.
Yeah, Scooby Posse, Zaze. And then you know, the Nazis, they were all kind of like only a little crew.
Did they have did they go by a certain name or no? The Nazis did.
No, but you know what they all wore? Remember like you like they would wear like soccer not soccer sports apparel sports teams. Remember that phase like all the kids people were wearing like sports teams?
Yes.
Yeah, like these kids would all wear like Georgetown Bulldog hats, Georgetown Hoyas.
Wow.
Yeah, cuz they were from that around that area in Massachusetts.
You know what the local Nazis around here used to wear? What's weird? They used to wear LA Kings and LA Raiders gear.
No shit.
And it was like around that's the era weird. Of NWA and stuff and we were just like that's weird.
That's kind of ass backwards.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I think they just wanted to be in the gang and then they got swallowed up into the white power stuff. But yeah, continue on that. Scooby Posse. You got
Scooby
Posse.
Got the Nazis. Yeah. And then, you know, we were just a bunch of like, there was like five of us from Brockton, Brockton area, you know? And we were just like the kids that just kind of like, it just fucked shit up. And like everywhere, all those kids are going to fuck shit up.
You know? So is the birth of that Brockton actually?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
Actually, the birth was like, so my buddies were just like, yo, let's just run with this. Let's just get FSU hats made.
Mm-hmm.
And at first I'm like, no, see, I'm just going to wear a Red Sox hat. I'm just going to wear a Red Sox hat. So there was five of us to start and the four of them got FSU hats and they wore them to a show and dudes were so bummed out. Like the same people that were going to shows and now wearing the same hat and dudes was like so bummed out about it.
Really?
Yeah. And I was just like, that's funny.
And that made you want to say, yeah, I'm getting
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I was like, you on that. Get me a fucking hat, you know? And that just started there.
So five heads from Brockton. That's the start. Any of those guys still in the any band scene at all? Or?
Everybody's still around.
Beautiful.
Everybody's still around, man. It's crazy. Yeah.
So how did it become like synonymous with Boston? Just because of the Brockton is basically, you know, close and.
For a while, like we used to call it FSU Brockton. Like we were like even like when the Boston guys started coming on board, like we'd still like, yo, we're gonna wear Brockton shit. But then, you know, hanging out more in Boston, you know, it's just like, all right, it just like once again, you know, nobody really knew where the small town of Brockton was, so we just kind of started just repping Boston.
Got you.
Yeah. So and then you just meet people and certain people come around. Like when my buddy Bruce came around, he was friends with people from Maine. And Connecticut, so you meet those dudes, and you know, you just get to know dudes, and shit just started just growing.
When you first said Bruce, I was thinking Albany.
No, but yeah,
you're talking about 100 Demons.
No, that's not my other buddy, Bruce.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
very.
He went on. He went on to bigger things. Yeah, there was five of us to start. I shout them out. It was me, Kevin, Matt, Bill, and Jamie. Five, like I said, like 17, 18 year old kids.
Yeah.
Just wilding out. But, you know, you had all the other Brockton skateboarder dudes. Like, you know, you had Foster and KO, like, and Ruiz. I don't know if you know, recognize Ruiz's name, you know,
yeah.
Like all these like dudes, we'd all just go to the shows together. So when people would look at us, I think a lot of times people would be like, oh shit, there's like 30 or 40 of them. But really, those five.
Five to start.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And out of Brockton, the birds.
Out of Brockton, yeah. Brockton, Mass.
Very cool. See right there, that's some good historical information.
Yeah. And you know, it's what's crazy. It'll be like, oh, they started to fight the Nazis. We didn't start to fight the Nazis. That just happened.
Yeah.
Like the Nazis are just kind of there. Like,
was it? Were you guys actually beefing with Nazis even before that?
Little things here and there, you know. But like, you know, but then.
But once you guys kind of put on a name to it. Did that become something that the Nazis became aware of?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And that might have been like almost like to summon the scene, a call to action, be like, I want to get down with these guys because I like what they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, like people are like, oh, I'm not going to, you know, rep the letters. He's like, but, you know, I'll definitely help out if shit pops off, you know. And like, you always just talk to people. You get to know people, you know. Don't be a dick. Don't be an asshole to everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and just people willing to help out when shit does pop off.
And that's a key thing for, you know, like you can't go unmentioned when talking about Boston and that whole region, you know, in the 90s. And what year would you think that was?
What, when the crew started?
Yeah.
That was 88.
88.
88.
Ooh, hard.
Yeah.
Hard year.
Hard year. Hard year. But that was like, yeah, that first year, like, dude started wearing, like, hats. And got these, like, little, because once again, you can go to the sports store and buy a hat, Florida State University. So we just go to the, you know, go to the store and you buy FSU hats.
Ah, yeah, before, because nowadays it's easy to get some shit embroidered. Back then it was kind of a pain in the ass.
Right.
Especially just to make five. Back then would be like, yeah, five, they're $45 a piece.
Right, right. Yeah, so like, but that was back in the days when people were repping like sports teams.
Yeah.
You had, you know, Boston gangs, they would rep like basketball teams and stuff like that. You know, the same thing like the Kings and the Raiders and shit.
Yeah. So, very interesting.
Product of the times, that's all.
Yeah, man. No doubt.
Yeah.
Listen, beautiful, beautiful. I learned stuff. I remembered stuff. I fell back into the thing. And this is what I like to end these things on. What did the 90s hardcore scene do for you? How do you feel about it here 30 years later?
You know, I look back and I did a lot. I met a lot of people. And I cherish those relationships that I made in the 90s. But, you know, I also look back as an older guy here. Oh, here comes the old guy comments, you know, like, yeah, I did a lot of dumb shit as kids do.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, I don't, no regrets on anything.
Nothing.
Nothing. Nothing.
Oh, my man, yo. You know? Serious. The real deal, baby.
You are who you are. You can't hide from who you are. You know?
Yeah, no doubt. We got to get up soon. Just hang out.
Absolutely, man. I like that.
Get something to eat for real, yeah.
Get something to eat. I'm gonna try to get down the area.
Yeah, anytime you're anywhere around here, Jersey, New York, PA, because I'm like in an area where all three are real convenient for me. And you know, we just got offered to do a show in Boston in late November with Slapshot.
There you go.
I don't know if we're gonna be able to do it, but if we do it,
you let me know. Let me know.
Yeah,
let me know. Make sure it's not on a weeknight, though. You know, I'm old. I can't.
No, kids, no way they would even ask us on a weeknight. There's no way.
It's bad, man.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not. But I'm with you, though. On a weeknight, no, I want nothing to do with nothing. No. I got to go to work. I got to wake up 3:30 in the morning. Yo, what are you doing for work? You still doing a...
Beer guy. I deliver beer.
My man. See that?
Yeah, truck driver.
That's a real guy right there.
7 more years till I retire, man.
Not bad, huh?
That's it. Yeah. 57, 30 now years
you,
out.
Are you going to still be riding that bike at that age?
Oh, absolutely. I can't wait.
You're a sick maniac, bro.
You know.
You're a sick maniac.
That's it. Yeah.
All right, my friend. Yo, I appreciate it. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, Richie. Have a good one, man.
Thanks a lot for listening. We really appreciate it. Post America Podcast will always be there for you. Don't forget that. Tune in next time. For more fun with the boys. Until then, get your fucking ass out of here before I give you a smack, motherfucker! Who the fuck you think you is? This is Post America. You ain't shit, motherfucker!